As Iyanla Van Zandt once said, it's important that we share our experiences with other people. Your story will heal you, and your story will heal somebody else. At Project Sleep, we believe that your stories matter, which is why we train people with sleep disorders on how to share their stories through our Rising Voices program. This Rising Voices podcast series features a variety of firsthand stories from people living with sleep disorders around the world. Each person's story offers unique and important insights.
Welcome to Project Sleep's podcast. Project Sleep is a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to raising awareness and advocating for sleep health, sleep equity, and sleep disorders. I'm your host, Julie Flygar. We're so glad you're here as we work together towards making sleep cool. On this podcast, all guests express their own opinions. While medical diagnoses and treatment options are discussed for educational purposes, this information should not be taken as medical advice. Each person's experience is so unique, which is why it's so important to always consult your own medical team when making decisions about your own health. If you haven't done so yet, please hit the subscribe button so you never miss a Project Sleep podcast episode. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave us a rating or review wherever you listen so that we can reach more listeners and raise more awareness. Hello, everybody. I'm here with Katie. Say hi, Katie.
Hi.
Katie Roden is a small business owner from New Braunfels, Texas, who loves sports and outdoor adventures. She was diagnosed with narcolepsy at the age of 18 and wants to share her story to improve the public's understanding of this neurological condition. As a speaker with Project Sleep's Rising Voices of Narcolepsy program, she will share her experience from symptom onset to diagnosis and life with narcolepsy. Katie hopes everyone will come away from her presentation with a better understanding of this silent and often misunderstood disorder. So it is my huge pleasure to introduce my friend and Rising Voices advocate, Katie. Take it away.
Well, thank you so much for the introduction, Julie. I appreciate everything that you're doing in the sleep world. You're just absolutely amazing. So I was born in Gosford, England, which is a little village between Liverpool and Manchester. And I moved to Houston, Texas in elementary school with my family. And we always felt a little bit different from everyone else, just being from a different country. And I remember we would go home from school and practice fake American accents so that we could fit in at school. But we come from a really, really loving and supportive family. Just my everything, and look, I'm tearing up. I love them so much. but we come from a really active and sports-oriented family. I was involved in a lot of sports from a young age, including snowboarding, taekwondo, squash, tennis, sailing, gymnastics, to name a few. But by far, my favorite sport was cheerleading. So the summer before I moved away to college, I worked as a lifeguard at a local swimming pool. And there were a lot of days that I remember being really tired on the lifeguard stand. And I would kind of drift off to sleep. But I always summed it up just to being in the heat all day. You know, being in the heat, I feel like, makes everyone a little bit sleepy. So I didn't really think anything of it. But there was one day in particular that there weren't a lot of people at the pool. So I pulled up a chair next to the pool and I was chatting with a family who I had come to know really well. It was a father and his two kids. And the mom had just given birth to a newborn baby and she hadn't seen her family since giving birth. So she came into the pool area and walked up to me and handed me the tiniest newborn baby I had ever seen. And as I looked down at this baby, I mean, she was just so beautiful. All of the muscles in my body, I could feel kind of went limp. And it started with my leg muscles, but I was sitting in a chair, so I didn't really notice. But I do think, you know, had I been standing, I would have dropped the baby. So really thankful I was sitting. But the muscle weakness kind of went up my body, and my upper body started doing this kind of slouching motion. And then the muscles in my face started twitching, and I completely lost muscle tone in my face. And my neck started doing this weird motion. And I mean, I was able to gain control of my muscles after probably a few seconds, but it was pretty scary, you know. And thankfully for me, when my arms failed to hold the baby, she lay peacefully in my lap. And thankfully the family didn't notice. But I just summed it up to muscle fatigue from being in the heat all day. So again, I didn't really think anything of it. My brother and I, we were a year younger than all of our classmates because we skipped a grade when we moved over from England. So I was only 17 years old when I graduated high school. I had a lot of options for university, but I decided on Texas State University in San Marcos, Texas, primarily because my big brother went there and I really missed him, but also because I heard they had a really great cheerleading team. So I tried out for the cheerleading team and I made it, and I was accepted into the psychology program at Texas State in the fall of 2003. Thankfully for me, a really good friend of mine from the high school cheerleading team, we decided to be roommates. And so we moved into the oldest dorm room on campus in the fall of 2003. It was that first semester of college at the age of 17 in my dorm room that I was first visited by demons. I was alone in my bed, warm beneath my sheets, and I could feel her warm breath on my face. Her feeble, clammy fingers were crawling at my skin. And to see this evil demon, she was disguised as an old hag, and she was sitting on me, crushing my chest. I was terrified and struggling to breathe. Although asleep, my eyes opened, revealing a haunted stare and morbid grin with a twisted glow of satisfaction. Using every ounce of energy, I attempted to move any inch of my body, but nothing. And then came the voices. There were millions of them, but I couldn't make sense of what they were saying. I could hear radio stations, conversations, and voices all blending into one frightful jumble of noise. I desperately fought to bring myself back to full consciousness, but I was stuck. I was trapped between reality and the dream world. Realizing there was no escape, no chance of moving any inch of my body, I was completely overwhelmed by exhaustion. All of my energy diminished from fighting off the gut-wrenching terror. So I surrendered, giving the old hag the satisfaction of winning, and I allowed myself to drift somewhere into the realm of slumber. I awoke that next morning, and I realized that our dorm room, the oldest dorm room on campus, must be haunted. These night terrors, as I called them, I didn't have another name for them, they started happening every time I went to sleep. And I talked to my roommate, and she was really, really supportive. I was so lucky to have her. And, you know, she tried to convince me that it's okay, it's just a dream. But it was more to me than that. All five senses were intact. I could feel her warm breath on my face, the pain as her fingernails clawed at my skin. I could smell her old breath telling me that she'd been dead for centuries, and the sounds were loud enough to wake the dead. I was really fortunate again to have my roommate to talk to, and also my big brother lived just down the road, so I would talk to him, and I'm so thankful I had them. I really don't think that I would have survived my freshman year at college without their support. While attempting to study one night, I was becoming drowsy, but I was still fully conscious. And I was standing at the desk, my desk in my dorm room, trying to study, but trying to keep myself awake. And I kept dropping off to sleep and catching myself. And I felt like weights were tied to my eyelids. I was just so tired. And all of a sudden, standing right there next to my desk was this gentleman. He was a Marine, a military gentleman, and he was there in his full dress blue military uniform. It was absolutely terrifying. The detail was absolutely incredible. I can still see him to this day with his shiny buttons all the way down his neatly pressed uniform and this sad, traumatic look in his eyes. And I mean, it was so terrifying that I let out a loud scream. It was enough to pull me back to full consciousness. And my muscles gave out and I fell to the floor and my muscles started doing this weird convulsing motion. And once I gained control again, I kind of screamed that I was seeing ghosts. I was walking around like a zombie, feeling like I hadn't slept in days, when in reality, I was getting about 10 plus hours of sleep every single night. And I couldn't understand why my roommate and I had almost identical schedules, but she didn't struggle with falling asleep or being tired all the time. Cheerleading was one of my huge passions, but every time I went to cheerleading, I was so exhausted that I'd just find a comfy place for a nap. I would sleep on the cheese mat underneath the trampoline. There was one day that I slept in the foam pit. I thought I was being really creative, and one of the gentlemen from the cheerleading team did a backflip and landed on top of me. So I just reverted to my signature move, which was sitting in the splits with my head on the ground and taking a nap. When I was that tired, I felt like, you know, anything for a few seconds sleep, and that would hopefully, you know, get me through practice. And all of my lectures ended the same. I woke up disappointed that I'd missed the whole class with, you know, crooked words of crooked handwriting, with big black lines scratching out words of gibberish, and drool covered page after drool covered page. Luckily for me, my classmates helped let me copy their notes. And when I'd wake up in class, I often felt trapped between reality and the dream world. And I would try to pull myself back to full consciousness, and I would know sometimes that it was the end of class and I had to wake up. And it was a struggle, and I would be exhausted. I'd fight myself back to full consciousness, and then my muscles again would do this weird convulsing motion. And it felt and it looked probably like I was having a seizure in class, and it was definitely very noticeable, and it was extremely embarrassing. It was about the time that I started being sexually assaulted every night by evil demons that I decided that it was really time to seek help. Every time I went to sleep, I'd be taunted by sexual behavior. And there was one night in particular, just as an example, that my roommate and I were in our dorm room. And I remember thinking that this maintenance man had come and knocked on our door, and he was there to change the fire alarm. And I tried screaming to my roommate to tell her not to let him in, because I knew what was going to happen. And he came up to the foot of my bed and he took advantage of me, and I could feel absolutely everything. It felt so real to me. It felt so real to me that I actually started videoing myself to prove that it wasn't happening. So at that time, I decided it was time to seek medical help. But I didn't really want to call the doctor and tell her what was going on, or tell her I was being visited by evil demons every night, because I figured that they would probably refer me to a psychiatrist. And I mean, honestly, at that point, I was starting to question my own mental well-being. So I made an appointment at the student health center based solely upon my drowsiness. And I went, I had blood tests taken, all came back negative. But they referred me to my neurologist. I went to the neurologist, I had a CAT scan, more blood tests taken, all came back negative. So at that point, I decided I would go back to Houston to see my primary healthcare physician. I'd always been a really healthy kid growing up, and he knew that I had to be close to my deathbed to pay him a visit. So when I went to this physician, I was really fortunate that he was good friends with a sleep specialist who had visited his practice just the week prior and handed out business cards to his sleep practice in Houston. So although the doctor couldn't help me, he pointed me directly where I needed to go. And I was just blown away, or really thankful, that the sleep doctor had gone around educating primary healthcare physicians on when to make referrals to a sleep specialist, because I really feel that without that, that my diagnosis probably would have been prolonged. So it was, I called the sleep doctor. I went on about a 2-month waiting list to see him, which strangely enough told me I was making an appointment with the right doctor, just because, you know, he was really popular, and obviously a lot of people were trying to get in to see him. And it was during that time on the waiting list, I think my family really got a firsthand experience of my troubles with sleep. We took a trip to the Rockies. We went to Keystone, Colorado that Christmas, and I slept the entire 2-3 day drive. I was so exhausted. There was one night that my dad stopped in Amarillo, Texas, so that he could sleep that night and get some rest. And it was that night that, with the attack of my brother's underwear, it sounds really silly now. At the time, it was absolutely terrifying. But we were in this small hotel room in Amarillo, and I saw a terrifying ghost when I went to sleep, and I woke up screaming. And so my parents woke up, my brother woke up, and tried to figure out what was going on. And when my brother asked me to describe my ghost, I described what was his. He pointed over to where his underwear was draped over this chair, and it was just a way less imaginative version of my ghost. So I realized that I was seeing things that were in my reality, and I was just making them more frightening when I went to sleep. We laughed and joked. That's kind of how I deal with things, is through humor. And my big brother, you know, what big brother would let his little sister live that down? After my trip to Colorado, you know, they really understood the necessity to get medical help. When I went back to university, I started an introduction to psychology class, and the teacher mentioned the word narcolepsy. The only thing I'd heard prior to that was from a friend. She briefly mentioned it. And so it was just enough for me to perk up and kind of snap out of sleep long enough to pay attention. I was really disappointed that the subject of narcolepsy covered only a very small paragraph in the 1,000-plus page textbook. But just, you know, the awareness that there was a condition out there was enough for me to be able to go back to my dorm room and kind of Google more of the symptoms. So I went back to my dorm room and I went Google crazy. And I started looking up all the symptoms of narcolepsy. And the one thing that really intrigued me was sleep paralysis. So when I Googled the symptoms, I learned that narcolepsy is a chronic neurological disorder that impairs the brain's ability to regulate the sleep-wake cycle. It affects 1 in 2,000 people. That's 200,000 Americans and 3 million people worldwide. Symptoms may vary by person and may include excessive daytime sleepiness, which are periods of extreme sleepiness during the day that feel comparable to how someone without narcolepsy would feel after staying awake for 48 to 72 hours. It turns out that the feelings of extreme exhaustion and napping I was experiencing were a prime example of excessive daytime sleepiness. Another symptom is cataplexy, which is the striking sudden episodes of muscle weakness, which are usually triggered by strong emotions such as laughter, exhilaration, surprise, or anger. The severity may vary from a slight slackening of the jaw or buckling of the knees to completely falling down. The duration may be for a few seconds to several minutes, and the person remains fully conscious even if unable to speak during the episode. So it turns out the muscle weakness I was experiencing when holding the newborn baby as a lifeguard and my other episodes of muscle weakness were an example of cataplexy. Hypnagogic and hypnopompic hallucinations, which are visual, auditory, or tactile hallucinations upon falling asleep or waking up, these can be frightening and confusing. And sleep paralysis, the inability to move for a few seconds or minutes upon falling asleep or waking up, it's often accompanied by hypnagogic or hypnopompic hallucinations. It's important to know that people without narcolepsy can experience these hallucinations and sleep paralysis. And in fact, about 1/3 of all people experience these at some point in their lives, but that's usually during periods of high stress or poor sleep. For people with narcolepsy, these are much more frequent and consistent over time. And for me, this is something that I personally still deal with every night, every time I go to sleep. And my poor husband has to deal with that too. So it turns out my dorm room wasn't haunted and I wasn't seeing ghosts. But the demons that were visiting me at night and the sexual behavior I was being taunted with were actually examples of hypnopompic and hypnagogic hallucinations and often accompanied by sleep paralysis. The last symptom is disrupted nighttime sleep, which, unlike public perceptions, people with narcolepsy do not sleep all the time. Timingness of sleepiness is off with narcolepsy. So one may fight sleepiness during the day, but struggle to sleep at night. There are two forms of narcolepsy. There is narcolepsy with cataplexy and narcolepsy without cataplexy. Recent research suggests that narcolepsy with cataplexy is caused by a lack of the chemical hypocretin, which is a key neurotransmitter that helps sustain alertness and regulate the sleep-wake cycle. Less is known about narcolepsy without cataplexy. So diagnosis typically includes a 24-hour sleep study. It includes a nighttime portion, which is a polysomnogram, and a daytime nap portion, which is a multiple sleep latency test, and to record one's brain waves. The diagnosis is mainly based on how quickly and frequently one goes into rapid eye movement sleep, or REM sleep, also known as dream sleep, during these tests. The tests were ended early because they said that it was conclusive for finding of narcolepsy. I had every symptom possible. I had sleep paralysis, night terrors, as I called them, the sleep paralysis and the hypnagogic hallucinations during my sleep study. So I think the technician was kind of surprised because I think it was probably his first time actually seeing that as well. The next day after my sleep study, I actually had a bachelorette party to go to. And so I remember going with these huge chunks of glue in my hair that I couldn't get out. And it was actually that day that I met my college boyfriend. So I met him with my hair that was a complete mess. But my diagnosis was narcolepsy with cataplexy. I was told by the doctor that I was a textbook person with narcolepsy. And I remember feeling extreme relief and just optimistic that there was medication that would help improve the symptoms, hopefully. And I was just thankful that I wasn't dying of a terminal illness. I did realize after my diagnosis that the symptoms had actually started a lot earlier after experiencing the chicken pox at age 12. I found years later, I found a diary of mine where I wrote that I felt like a bad student for falling asleep in class. And this was 1 week after I had chicken pox. So I think that's probably when it started. And then my symptoms just progressively worsened until the age of 18. When I looked back and I realized that during my high school years, I was sent to detention for sleeping in class. I was not a morning person. My poor mom had to fight with me every morning to get me out of bed. So I would get in trouble for being late to school. And I would often ask for the bathroom pass or just so I could take a quick nap, or I would go to the cheerleading locker room and sleep. I was also in an emergency medical technician class during this time. And the teacher would often ask for volunteers to lie on the stretcher. And I volunteered every single day so that I could just have a few minutes sleep. So my classmates got some pretty good practice with an unconscious patient. So treatments include, there's currently no cure for narcolepsy, but treatment for symptom management varies widely by person and may include wake-promoting, histamine-directed or stimulant medications to increase alertness in the daytime, nighttime medications to increase wakefulness and reduce cataplexy, antidepressant medication to decrease occurrences of cataplexy, and scheduled daytime naps. For me, the most effective treatment has been medication. I was taking a nighttime medication to suppress cataplexy and help with the excessive daytime sleepiness. Luckily for me, it also helped to subdue the sleep paralysis and hypnagogic hallucinations, and then a daytime medication for the excessive daytime sleepiness. After my diagnosis, I went on a trial study for a twice a night medication that was going to be a new medication that wasn't yet approved. It's always an adjustment with medication, but other coping strategies for narcolepsy vary widely by person, but may include social support, such as meetup groups or social media, and improvement in general health and wellness through sleep hygiene, diet, and fitness. For me, I love hanging out with my friends with narcolepsy. So life with narcolepsy. After diagnosis, I did continue cheering. My friends and family were so supportive. And I was really fortunate to also have a really supportive boyfriend all through college who was also on the cheerleading team with me and there to watch over me. For me, the support from my friends and family is huge. But also, I like to deal with things with humor. So, which is kind of ironic because my main cause of my cataplexy is humor. So, but it's also caused by other strong emotions. My cheerleading teammates knew when to spot cataplexy. There were a lot of times that I had cataplexy in front of an audience, which was embarrassing. Also, when the music would start for cheerleading for a competition or at a football game, I would get so excited and there was a huge rush of adrenaline. So I was always frightened that I was going to fall to the ground. And, you know, my muscles did give out, but I just got really good at kind of hiding it or controlling it to where I didn't completely fall over. Cataplexy happened for me a lot. One time in particular, I was stunting. We were doing a big pyramid, and for some reason, they had me as the back spot. And the gentleman who I was holding passed gas, and that made me laugh a lot. And when I laughed, my muscles completely gave out. So I went crashing to the ground. He went crashing to the ground, and the whole pyramid came down on top of me. And we just all laughed. And I mean, that was just, that was a kind of, that's what happened, you know? And so when I was in the stunts, I was always scared that my muscles would give out, but my stunt partners were wonderful and they caught me. There was one other time, a more serious time that I had cataplexy. I was on the boat with it was over the summer holiday with my roommate and my mom. And we were swimming in the lake and laughing over something silly, I'm sure. And my muscles started giving out and I started to go under the water. And you would think at that point that you would think, okay, this is serious. I'm going to, you know, stop laughing now and hopefully come to. But no, for me, it just was even more funny. So I kept laughing. And then all of a sudden it became serious. I realized that I could drown. So that was another strong emotion. And my mom, she ran and dove off the pontoon boat and came to my rescue. And I was never allowed to swim without a life jacket after that. But so not always funny. There are serious times with cataplexy. I did graduate from college in 2008. And after college, I struggled to maintain a steady job because bosses weren't always understanding of my need to nap. But at the age of 23, I met my husband. I was searching for a home to purchase with my big brother. And I met this real estate agent who sold me a house just one street over from him. So I think, you know, he was trying to get me to move close to him. But we went on a couple of dates. And I think part of the reason that I really fell in love with him was because he seemed to really, really relate to my struggles with sleep. And it was because I later found out that he also had narcolepsy. He would talk to me about these symptoms. And so I actually encouraged him to go and get a sleep study. And he did. And he was diagnosed with narcolepsy without cataplexy. So Robbie's dream was to start his own real estate and property management firm. And mine was to do something in the sleep world. So we combined our passions and we started our company in 2013. Our company is 3Z Realty and 3Z Property Management. The three Z's, ZZZ, stands for sleep. And we raise funds and awareness for narcolepsy. It's great because it gives us the flexibility to make our own schedules and schedule appointments when we're the most alert. For me, I am not a morning person. Thankfully, my husband is, but my clients don't have to know that my morning appointment was actually with my bed. We have napping areas in all of the offices. So my employees know if my door's closed, just give me a few minutes and I'll be back, you know. But I'm really proud of us that we now manage over 100 properties. I think people often think that because we have narcolepsy, we might sleep all the time and not be reliable. And that's not the truth at all. In fact, I think we work 10 times harder. And I'd like to just encourage anyone with narcolepsy not to be afraid, that you can do anything you put your mind to. Success might look a little different, but with a little creativity, you can create your own unique business plan. And that's what my husband and I did. I'm also really proud that my husband was voted the best realtor in San Marcos. And I recently won an award for being an inspirational and visionary woman in leadership in my county. So we just really look forward to the future, to continuing to hopefully inspire other people and continue to raise awareness through our company. The thing that we're the most excited about is I am currently 7, almost 8 months pregnant. So we are expecting a little baby, a little girl in March. And that has been a struggle of it on its own. I've been off of medication this whole time. But I know that I've got a lot of friends out there that have narcolepsy that are parents. I know you guys are great parents. So I'm really excited to lean on you guys for support. So because of low awareness, even among physicians and misperceptions, there is an average of 8 to 15 years between narcolepsy symptom onset and diagnosis. I feel really fortunate that I received a diagnosis only 4 months after seeking medical help, even though I did, you know, experience symptoms, I think, or for a lot longer than that. But I'm just really thankful that my diagnosis was a lot sooner than some people have to deal with. It's estimated that the majority of people with narcolepsy are currently underdiagnosed or undiagnosed or misdiagnosed. Common misdiagnoses include epilepsy, depression, and schizophrenia. That's huge. And because of that, that's why through our company, it's really important for us to raise awareness. And also because of that, in 2011, my husband and I volunteered for an MTV program called True Life, I Have Narcolepsy. We were under the impression that they were coming to film us as a couple with narcolepsy and starting our own business. And that wasn't the case at all. They made it look like I had a really unsupportive husband and that, you know, I was struggling to get off medication. And I feel like they took very small, insignificant moments and kind of blew them up to cater to kind of a younger audience to make people want to watch. And to me, I mean, I was really thankful that narcolepsy was being spotlighted in the media, but I really, there were a lot of stories that I felt or a lot of things that happened while the crew was there that I think could have been, were a little bit more significant to the life of really the true life of having narcolepsy. One example of that is when the crew was there, I took my nighttime medication one night. And for me personally, when I take this nighttime medication, I have about 15 minutes and it just knocks me out cold. Well, I realized that my dog, I hadn't taken her out to pee yet. So I wasn't living with my husband at this time. I was living with my brother who wasn't home. And I accidentally locked myself out when I went outside. So my medication kicked in and I fell fast asleep in my front yard. And I fell asleep in an ant bed. So I was absolutely covered in ant bites. And my dog, bless her, she got on top of me and she was clawing at me and finally woke me up and she had ant bites all over her because she was trying to get them off of me. And that next morning, I mean, the camera crew wasn't there that evening, but they were there first thing the next morning to see the aftermath of this and to see me having to wear a long sleeve shirt, trying to cover all of these ant bites and trying to explain this to my clients because it looked like I had some kind of disease on my arm. And I was also really sick. And so it was just moments like that that I think, and a lot of things happened like that while the camera crew was there that I think that they could have maybe broadcasted. But so that's just the true life of having narcolepsy. Unexpected things do happen. But so I just want to, if you put yourself out there in the media, you are at the mercy of the producer to kind of spotlight things in the way that they find important. So for me, that's why I'm really, really proud to be a part of Project Sleep, Rising Voices of Narcolepsy, to be able to tell my story on my own terms. So having narcolepsy has just made me realize I'm strong and I can do anything I put my mind to. I may not have started my own business without the challenges caused by narcolepsy, and it's just made me a more creative and open-minded person. I've learned not to judge people because everything might look normal on the outside, but we're all struggling our own internal battle. I'm sharing my story today as part of the Rising Voices of Narcolepsy, a program of the nonprofit organization Project Sleep, empowering patient advocates to share their stories and improve understanding of narcolepsy. I hope by sharing my story, it inspires other people with narcolepsy to do the same and piques interest in the medical field to focus more resources on sleep research. Thank you guys so much for your time listening to my story. I really appreciate it.
Yay, Katie! Great job!
Are you facing sleep issues or a sleep disorder? Project Sleep is now excited to have the Sleep Helpline, a nonprofit-led free national helpline providing personalized support and resources. You can reach out today to speak with a compassionate resource specialist who will listen and help provide accurate sleep disorders information, resources to help navigate daily living and the healthcare landscape, and connect you with a certified sleep center and patient support organizations. Contact the Sleep Helpline at 1-800-819-2043 or by filling out a form on our website at project-sleep.com.
Thank you for going through that whole journey. What a journey. And I think one of the things that is so powerful about your presentation is that those 4 months of looking for answers before you even found a diagnosis sound excruciating. I mean, they sound like really challenging times. All of the demons. And thank you for bringing it to life. I know it's really difficult, but I just think it's so important to show that that was 4 months and it makes it almost tangible in a way that we can comprehend. And then to think of many people that are still living right now, going years, possibly with similar symptoms. So yes, thank you so much for sharing. You mentioned doing your thesis about, having connection to narcolepsy. Tell us just a little bit more about what you were looking at. That's so neat.
Sure. Unfortunately, never got to publish my findings, but at that time I spoke with, I believe, Miley Einen, and her husband had done a study on sleep paralysis, and so she was kind of helping guide me through some of that. And the thing that was so amazing to me was that the content of everybody's dreams was so similar that, I mean, I don't know, I'm still just blown away by that, but I had a lot of data that was really hard to put into charts because it was just so many variables. So my teacher and I kind of struggled with that, but the It was really, really interesting.
That is so cool. I love when people can, you know, I started doing my big law school paper about narcolepsy stuff too. It just became a natural fit of keeping me awake by things that interest me personally. So that's so cool. Last question was about pregnancy with narcolepsy. I know you mentioned it. And, you know, having, you know, two parents with narcolepsy, have you guys talked about managing sleep schedules or just tell us a little bit more.
Yeah, we weirdly think, and we're probably completely wrong, that because I'm not a morning person, I'm up all night. This is about the time that I start to wake up. So I think because of that, we feel that maybe I'll be really good, you know, at the nighttime, and Robbie can kind of help me in the morning. But I don't know. I mean, we're winging this. We have no idea what to expect. We're really excited, but I do know it's going to be a challenge. And I think one concern for us is, you know, whether or not the baby might have narcolepsy, but we'll jump that hurdle when we get there. And I'm sure there's a lot of sleepless nights in our future.
Well, it's amazing. And just can't wait to continue watching your journey. Like knowing you, I guess, was it in your 20s being on the real true life?
Yep. In my early 20s. Yep.
Now all this is just so cool to see all this. And let's see. All right. Let's go with some questions from the community. We have Karina in Peru wants to know, did you gain any weight? And which medications do you take?
Oh, sorry. I thought you meant during pregnancy. I was going to say, yes, I have gained 50 pounds. But I'm guessing you mean I gained weight on medication. And I had the opposite problem. I actually lost a lot of weight. And I think that was maybe because of the stimulants I was taking, and I just wasn't eating as much during the day. But I have heard otherwise.
I guess before pregnancy, what medication, you know, regimen, because now you've had to come off of, which treatments, and of course, everyone's different, but Karina was just wondering which, you know, forms of treatment you were using.
I was taking the, I don't know if I can say the name brand here, but the twice a night medication, which was really, really helpful. And that really helped with, although I would still have sleep paralysis, it really made it a lot less. And that really helped my cataplexy a whole lot too. And then I would take a stimulant during the day. Can I say the name brand here, or would you prefer?
That's fine. I mean, no, I mean, I think what you said is fine. I think people can, we just try to be a little bit more to the generic language, not to promote any specific treatments or brands. So let's see. Matt wants to know, do you continue to incorporate cheer into your workout and exercise approach?
That's a really good question. You know, I would really like to. I miss cheerleading so much. And unfortunately, I don't. I kind of lost touch with that area of my life. But I'm hoping that my little one will really want to get into cheerleading. So hopefully I can get back into it myself.
Oh my gosh, that'd be so cool. I just wanted to, I know one other part of your story, there's so many parts that we wanted to include, but I know that you and Robbie also hit a milestone in the last couple of years, I think in getting a house yourself, right?
We did. Yeah. It was really nice after helping a lot of other clients, you know, purchase homes, that we finally got our dream home in New Braunfels. So we're really happy about that.
And then also another thing that we didn't quite get to, because there was so much, is that you guys host like narcolepsy awareness. Tell us a little bit what you've done for narcolepsy awareness.
We do. Every World Narcolepsy Day and what's the word? What am I looking for here? Narcolepsy Awareness Day and World Narcolepsy Awareness Day. We host parties. We've done big paint parties where we've had some of the organizations kind of help us to advertise them. And it's been really great. We've had people, you know, come down from San Antonio, from Austin to come in and visit with us. And recently, I have a good friend who has narcolepsy that she actually used our company to buy a house because she heard, you know, she knew that I had narcolepsy. And so we've been able to connect, and that's been really nice. Yeah, we just do whatever we can. And then at the end of the year, we do donate a portion of our income to various organizations.
So cool. Okay. We have a question from Canada. Do you ever take a break from the stimulants?
This has actually been the first break that I've really taken during the 8 months that I've been pregnant. And before that, I was on them, I mean, since I can remember, you know, since my diagnosis. So Honestly, my husband really likes it. He says he likes me better without all of the medication. And also without the nighttime medication, I think that I don't honestly know that I'll go back on the nighttime medication.
And then does your husband, we have a question about your husband's medication regimen, but maybe that's for him to share. I don't know how.
He won't mind.
What's his medication like?
Well, he actually, he did try the nighttime medication and it just did not work for him. He had a lot of pretty bad side effects. So he actually doesn't take any medication at all. He just diet, exercise.
Wow. And naps? Do you guys nap?
But we nap a lot. we love naps.
Awesome. I think that's it for questions. So thank you, Katie. This has been so amazing. And just thank you to everyone for tuning in.
Well, thank you for all you do, Julie. You're absolutely amazing. We appreciate it.
Of course. Okay. Bye for now, everybody.
The Project Sleep Podcast is produced by Carver Sound Productions. For more information on podcast production services, visit carversoundproductions.com.